One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-.
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, my friend, and welcome to Catch Up with Louise McSharry. This is the final episode of the first week of the three individual episodes. I feel like I've been talking at you a lot. I'm kind of sick of myself. I hope you're not sick of me. I hope you have enjoyed the sections of the podcast being separated out across the week. The feedback from you guys has been positive, but obviously I always welcome it. You can always use the Catch Up phone number, which is in the show notes, to get in touch. Send me a voice note, tell me what you're thinking. I also love to hear from you there just on anything that's kind of on your mind. And then I use those for the Patreon mailbag episode where I respond to all of those notes and voice notes and text messages and the like. And I'm always very happy to hear from you. It's been fun this week. I am in Galway now as I record. I feel like I've been all around the world the last week. I was in Galway last night to interview Laura De Barra in Kenny's bookshop as part of the celebration for her new book, Garment Goddess, which is fantastic. And it was really lovely to be in Galway. I think lots of you know I lived here for 3.5 years in my 20s, and it was a very important and special time for me. I made really good friends here who are still my friends now. And I just really always love coming back here. I feel like really deeply connected to Galway. I think I will always feel that way. I would happily move back here, to be honest. And it was really, really nice to be back last night. We went to dinner in Ain, which was absolutely beautiful. It's kind of small plates, fancy food. Very, very nice. I love steak tartare. And the steak tartare there was one of my faves that I've ever had. So if you're into steak tartare and you are in Galway, I would recommend that dish. And then we just went for a few drinks after. Had to get a pint in Nocton's, obviously. You can't go to Galway and not get a pint in Nocton's. Those are just the rules of Galway. And yeah, it was just really nice to hang out with Laura and the people from her publisher and Sarah from Kenny's Bookshop and Tomas. It was just a lovely, lovely, lovely time. I was trying to think, do I have any recommendations for you? Because I think I'll probably put those in this section on a Friday rather than at the end of the episode the way that I used to. And I really don't have a lot this week aside from what I've already mentioned. And that's the other thing. They'll probably just come up kind of organically across the week. I like that recommendation for the steak tartare in Ain, for example. Because I've been so busy, I just haven't really been watching a lot or, you know, taking in a lot of culture. I do obviously recommend Laura De Barra's Garment Goddess book. If you're not familiar with it, don't worry. I recorded an interview with Laura yesterday, which will be on next Friday's interview episode. So you'll hear all about it then. But now to today. Today's interview is with Veda, who is someone I have admired for, 20 years, which makes me feel 105. But Veda is a drag queen. If you've ever been to Witchy Wednesday in the George, or indeed if you've been to the Sunday show over the years, the Bingo with Shirley Temple Bar, you have probably seen her perform. She is brilliant. But what you don't know necessarily when you see her perform is that she's really, really lovely and gentle and kind and funny. And I just am such a fan. So Veda's recent work in recent years has been mostly around, aside from the drag, obviously, has been around raising awareness of HIV and trying to encourage people to drop the stigma that exists around HIV. And one of the latest projects in that context is her new film, Pregnant with a Drag Queen, which you can see on Virgin Media next Tuesday. It is premiering at the Dublin International Film Festival this weekend. And I was just so, so delighted to sit down with Veda to talk about it. I really hope you enjoy this chat. I could talk to Veda forever. So I hope you feel the same way listening. So I would love to start by saying thank you so much for having me in your beautiful home. It is so lovely here. You were telling me you've been here for 20 years.
Yes, I've been here in the heart of the Black Pits in Dublin 8 since 2004, the end of 2004, so 20 years.
Yeah.
And it's not easy to maintain a semi detached house in Dublin 8.
Well, this one is so beautiful. I was walking in, I was like, it's like a fairy tale cottage, and you said that the girls call it Miss Honey's. That it totally feels like that, like beautiful garden and greenery, and it's beautiful.
Yeah.
What's it like for you to have like a stable home for 20 years? I can't imagine that.
It's amazing. I'm going to start off with a bit of a name drop. It's really amazing. And one of the reasons it looks so pretty from the outside, A, is my mom is brilliant gardener, so I grew up with that. But when I got the house and it was just going through its first transformation, my friend Anna Matronic visited with her husband. And when she was leaving, she's getting in the car and she said to me, make it the prettiest house on the street.
Yeah.
She said as she got into the car. And I thought to myself, by the time she comes back, it's going to be the prettiest house on the street.
And it is, because when I pulled up, I hadn't looked at the numbers. I just was like, I knew I was in the rough area. Uh-huh. And I saw it immediately and was like, oh my God, that house is so gorgeous. And it's your house.
Great. Thank you. I'm so proud.
Yeah, I'm jealous, I'll be honest.
And it feels great to have a home. And it also, it's a tough one. I feel so happy for myself that I've had the privilege. And as someone who works as an artist, it's been my only security has been to manage to pay that mortgage every month is all I keep focused on, focused on. I joke about it at my show every month. I say, so we're here so that I can get one month closer to retiring. But I love it. It makes me very happy. And I'm so aware for that reason that a lot of the mental health issues and crises that young people and queer young people are having now, I think, is about not being able to have a home. As simple as that. A space where you're in control, where you can be creative, where you can let your walls down and close the door, feel safe.
I totally agree. I mean, I see it all the time with queer friends of mine who, you know, are, because the thing is, it's not even just about not being able to buy a house. I mean, being able to buy a house would obviously be a stunning thing for anyone. But for someone to even to rent a room, if you are vulnerable or you feel vulnerable, to be able to find a situation with people who you're going to feel safe with, like it is an extra layer, you know, to all of this.
Pixie lived here with us for a decade.
Wow.
And I think that's an example of, how if you can find a queer family, you don't want to leave them. It took a pandemic and a bit of a nudge for her to fly from the nest.
Well, I'd love to talk about Pixie actually in that relationship. But before we do, let's contextualize. As I said, you know, in the introduction, we are here to talk because there is a film about you, which I loved. It's called Pregnant with a Drag Queen, and it is on in the Dublin International Film Festival on Saturday. But the reason that I especially wanted to have you on to talk about it is because everybody can watch it on Tuesday on Virgin Media One, which I was just thrilled to see, because sometimes indie films like this, we don't all get access to, but everybody can watch this. So if you're listening, you can watch it. It's Tuesday at 11. It's going to be on Virgin Media One.
And then on the player, so you can catch up with it later as well,
exactly.
Which is great. Yeah.
It's so gorgeous. How did it come to be?
Andrea Horan is the first part of the story. Andrea and I were hanging out during the pandemic a lot because she's my gorgeous neighbor. We used to go to Marlow & Co., the local coffee shop, and hang out in the queue as if it was Bergane. All the local gays would be there and we'd dress for the occasion. Anyway,
I love it.
Yeah.
The glamour.
Nostalgia for the pandemic. But anyway, we were talking about my HIV activism really a lot around that time. And I was just getting started on my journey with our podcast for people living with HIV, Pause Vibe. And meanwhile, she has a good friend who used to work with her at Think Tank. I always find it hard to say Think House. That's right. Colin Brady, and he directs films. And basically, she put the two of us together in her head and suggested to him that he should make a film about drag and possibly about me. So I went for a coffee in Simon's Place. Sadly, Simon's Place is no more, with Colin. And he gave me his idea, which was to make this short film about drag. And that was as loose as it was in his head.
Right.
And I said to him, I'm an open book, so I'm happy to make the film. And I love Andrea. I trust her. So we're good.
Yeah.
We're good. But neither of us really had the bones of the idea yet. Yeah. And I told him that HIV activism was the most important thing to me, that that had to be one of the messages of the film, and that positive discrimination when it comes to casting was something that I would love to do.
Yeah.
And to have as many people living with HIV as possible playing parts in the film.
Yeah.
And he agreed to that right off the bat. And that was all I needed for me to be passionate about it.
Yeah.
And as a result of that, the actor who plays younger me, Adrian Duggan, is a 21-year-old student nurse who's living with HIV.
Gorgeous, by the way.
Beautiful. Does an amazing job.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Robbie Lawler's in it, playing young Panty Bliss.
Yeah.
And Panty Bliss is in it. And another handful or couple of handfuls of members of our community who've all come out on our podcast. We call them our Pause Vibe tribe.
Yeah, and I love that in the credits they are top of the credits and identified as a HIV positive cast.
Because they're out and proud and activists. Yeah. And that in itself makes me super proud and emotional. Yeah. People who don't inhabit that space or understand it mightn't understand how important it is to us. Mm. When Robbie and I started doing our podcast and really working on getting the U equals U message out there, which is the message that people who are on effective treatment can't pass on HIV.
Yeah. The way you put it in the film is that actually people who are HIV positive on effective treatment are actually the safest people you could have sex with.
Yes, because we know that we are not able to pass it on to you. We're undetectable.
Yeah.
That's what U equals U means. Undetectable equals untransmittable. Mm. So, yeah, and most people just don't know their status. Most people are not getting tested regularly. And so if you're having unprotected sex with someone, it's definitely safer to choose someone who knows their status and is out about it.
Yeah, funnily that makes enough. Sense. Yeah.
And gosh, yeah, so I don't know. I kind of lost my way there.
Sorry, it's my fault because I interrupted you.
That's good.
But yeah, so I mean, I think that your HIV activism is so admirable. But before I knew that you were a HIV activist, I just knew you as this like unbelievably glamorous, mind-blowing drag queen. Like I remember the first time I saw you perform in the George, I was like, oh my God, I didn't know that drag could be like this. Like I knew a little, I mean, I was very young and very kind of dumb. And I didn't, you know, what I knew about drag was quite limited. I'd never considered that you could do drag to like an Arctic Monkeys song. And like, I remember, I think the first time I saw you, that's exactly what you were doing. And you were literally swinging like from the lights across the stage on the George. And I was like, oh my God, this is my drag. Like this person is so cool and so edgy and so different. And I loved all the drag. I mean, I loved it all, but like from the get-go, I was like, who is this person? I need to know everything. And I have watched you from afar for so long. And the more I got to know you, the more I loved you, because you're not just cool. You also are kind and you have this drive to like make things better. Where do you think that comes from?
Gosh, I think I had some great role models, you know, queens, amazing queens in my life. Luckily, I went to San Francisco in the end of the 1990s and hooked up with this great crowd of performers at a bar called The Stud at a club called Tranny Shack, which was created by an amazing queen called Hiklina. She also was living with HIV and she was very active. Mm. She would go to Washington to big demonstrations and stuff like that. She passed away, sadly, last year. Mm. She was a great role model for me. Very kind, very cutting, very funny. All of those things at the same time.
Yeah.
Just a great role model. Panty, of course, my big sister, is the dream. Mm. She's such an amazing person. So I guess it's easy as well for me to give credit to other people. But my mom's an incredibly kind person. And I think that I've always enjoyed playing the villain, while knowing that there's a much softer person, you know, behind that character that I like to play. And yeah, also, I think that going through a HIV diagnosis and putting myself in the closet for a very long time caused quite a big struggle, a mental health struggle in the beginning. And even though I've overcome it and I'm quite proud of myself, what I've done since then, I don't want that for anybody else.
Yeah.
So I think that that's at the core of what I do. It's not that I think I've done everything right or I have the answers. It's the opposite of that. It's more like I really messed that up.
Yeah.
And I really don't want anybody else to have to.
Yeah. It's so, really generous, though.
Thank you. I feel very lucky, though, as well. Mm-hmm. I feel like the rewards are just endless.
Yeah.
And the people I get to work with, I like to quote this Leonard Cohen song, and I say, I'm guided by the beauty of our weapons.
Mm.
And that's what I like to say about them, our tribe. We want to destroy stigma as much as we can. We work really hard at it. And the people that have come out in support of us, who are now our friends and co-activists, are the biggest payoff for me personally in my life.
Yeah.
They're just such an amazing group of people. We grow in number year on year.
Yeah.
We grow in heart year on year. You know?
Well, I mean, you were involved as well in How to Tell a Secret,
yes,
the Sean Dunn film, which I loved as well. And there's a bit in that where there was an event or a gathering in Meeting House Square where people stood up and spoke about their status.
Yeah.
And I found that so moving, because when you think about what's happened in our lifetime, even, you know, in terms of the change that's happened around the stigma, and then, you know, an event like that pushes it forward even more.
Yeah.
A film like that pushes it forward even more. Yeah. But this film, your film, is so different. It's so fun and like, you know, gas and kind of wild, and it doesn't feel super heavy. And I think it's so important to have this messaging in that kind of packaging as well. And obviously that's a choice. I can see you're smiling.
I'm laughing inside because, you know, I love passionately How to Tell a Secret and Anna and Zlada.
Love it.
Sean.
I think it's brilliant.
It's brilliant. And we spent the last couple of years promoting it and working with it in various ways. And that's been great to get it from its first screening in Dublin to Netflix in the UK and Ireland. Has taken quite a bit of work, but it's been an amazing journey. But the film itself is very serious and kind of sad.
Yeah.
And I wanted right from the get-go to make sure that this talked about HIV in a much more modern, up-to-the-minute kind of way. And that everything that has changed in the last 2 years because of what we've done is represented now.
Mm.
So when Robbie got to see the film for the first time, Robbie Lawler, he was most blown away by our Pride activity.
Mm.
When you see the entire tribe at Pride out in the streets, just full of joy, carrying signs, being so warmly received by the city of Dublin as well.
Mm.
It's very moving, and it's very different to that other scene in Meeting House Square in How to Tell a Secret, when the numbers were much smaller and people were struggling more, including me, to tell their story, you know?
Yeah.
And so I love that you picked up on that with no shade to How to Tell a Secret. We wanted to make this not the bitter pill, the sweet pill, the tic-tac, the one that's fun to swallow.
Mm.
And with credit to Colin, he wrote the script based on interviews that we did here in this room. Just he interviewed me, and one of the things that we agreed was that it would always make you smile and make you feel good by the time you got to the end.
Yeah.
Even though we deal with difficult things.
Yeah.
But he took that to the next level, I think, because in the two saddest moments in the film, which are struggling in my late teens, I think, or as a child with my relationship with my mom and dad, and struggling with my HIV diagnosis later in the film, the funniest things happen straight away afterwards.
Yeah.
And when I talk about HIV in this film, Pixie comes in with a megaphone.
I love that.
cuts me off and changes the whole direction of what we're saying. And that was his choice. And it's one of the things I love most. Yeah. It was like, we're not going to stay in this space.
Yeah.
We're going to move on.
Yeah.
Now we've said it.
Yeah, totally. That's what it feels like. Like, it's not that kind of after school special kind of, here's what we're learning today kind of, you know, it's very subversive. I think it's just so good.
Life is full of what-ifs, some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow wherever you are. Tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
Mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Great.
One thing that I really loved is that we start and we're in... What was Mr. Pussy's club called that you worked in?
Mr. Pussy's Cafe Deluxe.
Yes. So we were in Mr. Pussy's Cafe Deluxe. And I am just fascinated by that time. Like, you worked there. I didn't know that you two were involved in that.
Yes. Yeah.
So for people who don't know, because there will be people who won't know anything about drag or the history of drag or queer culture or anything. And that's, which is, by the way, is fine. But like, I want them to come into this glamorous world with us. Who was Mr. Pussy and what was happening there?
It's very interesting, especially because this was all in the 90s, mid-90s, before the internet and the whole social media phenomenon, before cameras on your phone.
Yeah.
So evidence of Mr. Pussy's is quite thin on the ground.
Yeah.
But we managed to dig some up with Mr. Pussy's help. Mr. Pussy has been performing in drag, the misleading lady is how we describe her, since... the late 1960s, she started in London. She came to Dublin in the 1980s and hasn't left much since then. Mm. She cornered the market in drag the end of the 70s, early 80s by touring all over Ireland, every country pub, every inn, every hotel that would have her. She was the only working drag queen in Ireland, and she became very famous. She appeared a lot on panel quiz shows and comedy shows and RTE back in the day, and was in the press all the time. And she was a real socialite. She still is a socialite.
Yeah.
She's still kicking around. She's still a socialite, a legend. But she knew everyone and everyone knew her. So she was very friendly with Gavin Friday, who is amazing artist in his own right, but also Bono's bestie.
Best mate, yeah.
And Bono and Gavin and Norman, Bono's brother, came up with this idea to open a cafe and call it, name it, dedicate it to Mr. Pussy and have Mr. Pussy do cabaret there. Mm. And it happened. It happened. It was beautiful. Norman already had a restaurant on Suffolk Street called Tosca, and Mr. Pussy's was the restaurant right next door.
Okay.
So we kind of extended into this bigger family.
Yeah.
And it was glorious. It would stay open 22 hours and we would close for 1 hour and clean and open again. And it was a cafe, essentially like a greasy spoon,
right,
all day long, with maybe the occasional show, drag queen, or we used to bring in good quality beatboxers, street performers, anyone who came to town that was good, they'd come in maybe in the afternoon. And then at night we would serve booze illegally in teapots, and it became famous for that, or alcoholic milkshakes, because there was no, the licensing laws were very strict. So it was a speakeasy. You had to eat food, but you could drink all night. There was amazing mezzanine where no one could really see you, but you could see everybody else. The whole place was decorated by Gavin Friday's taste, you know, he was the art director, and by Alison Crosby, Harry Crosby's daughter, who's an amazing producer. And they did such an incredible job. The whole place was just surreally beautiful in a sort of Moulin Rouge style.
God, it sounds magical. How did you end up there?
I worked in the JCR in Trinity when I went to college, the Junior Common Room, which was essentially a big cafe collective.
Yeah.
And this beautiful girl who worked there called Fiona became one of the managers in Mr. Pussy's, and she poached or took a couple of us with her, who she thought would be good for Mr. Pussy's.
Isn't that interesting that that became such a turning point in your life?
Yeah, crazy.
Like, what if you hadn't had that job?
I know, yeah. And I wanted that job so bad as well. You know, once I'd heard of it, I was like, oh my God, God, please take me. And they did. Thankfully, they took me.
And what was it like, you know, what was the vibe like?
Well, they play with super camp music, like a lot of Shirley Bassey a lot of the time, and those kinds of divas, Cilla Black, all that stuff. And the staff were mostly very diverse, way ahead of its time in that way, very queer, and dare I say it, like young and good looking.
Mm-hmm.
And part of the show really was just to swan around and amuse the people.
Yeah.
So they hired people who had big personalities.
Yeah.
So it wasn't really about the quality of your service. It was more about your relationship with your
It was the vibe.
Server. Yeah, exactly.
And so who was the clientele?
And the clientele were everybody went there. Everybody. The clientele were U2's friends and fans. Mm-hmm. A lot of fans just visiting Dublin and would come there just for that reason. U2 used to, in fairness, be there all the time. Bonnie used to come in all the time and have breakfast in the middle of the day, you know? And yeah, so the customers were all the clubbers in Dublin as well. There was a very small but very cool club scene. So the all-night customers were really the clubbers. But every queer icon you can imagine that came to Dublin came.
Yeah.
Mr. Pussy had those kinds of connections you know.
Yeah.
So, of course, Erasure and Boy George and, you know, Bronski Beat and everybody. Also, Adam Clayton was dating Naomi Campbell for a brief while.
Mm-hmm.
So all of the supermodels came more than once.
And like, are you very cool at this point and you're like not phased, or were you losing your mind?
Totally like phased, as in losing my mind.
Yeah.
Huge fan of lots of these people,
yeah.
especially the supermodels. Like
yeah.
huge fan. But how it worked out was quite fun. Myself and Michael O'Malley were considered to be maybe, you know, the most fun of the staff.
Mm-hmm.
And we got to work the mezzanine. Not everybody got to work the mezzanine.
Okay, yeah.
So that meant that if Dolores O'Riordan was in, that's where she was. If the cores were in, that's where they were. So I had built myself up before I had to deal with supermodels, I guess.
Yeah.
But when I actually was face to face with them, they couldn't have been lovelier.
Yeah.
I'm just a cute young gay getting them drinks. But they couldn't have been lovelier. I was absolutely blown away by how beautiful they were. It was like Linda, Christy, Naomi, Kate, you know.
Wow.
The lot.
Yeah.
But, and the U2 had a kitchen, a club called The Kitchen in Temple Bar at the time. And they had very famous DJs DJing there all the time because they were making the album, I think, Octung Baby. They were very into that rave culture. And so The Kitchen and Mr. Pussy's was really like this massive, expensive green room for the band.
So, so would people have gone, I'm trying to like picture the night. So would people have gone to Mr. Pussy's before The Kitchen or after The Kitchen?
After The Kitchen.
Okay.
And maybe before, depending on what clique you were in.
Yeah.
But definitely after. After the clubs closed was really when you wanted to be there.
Oh my God, I would love to just go back in a time machine just for one night.
It was insane. And people would stay until the sun came up, essentially. Wow. There'd be a lot of taxis outside in the morning, and that would be that. Everybody had to get out.
Fun.
Yeah. Really fun. Yeah, really great. Really wild experience for a kid.
Yeah.
For a young person. Like, I was 20, 21.
Yeah.
What happened as well next was amazing. When Mr. Pussy's closed down, it was announced very shortly before it closed. It was got to do with, allegedly, the books, which makes perfect sense because everybody was drinking. The staff, everybody. And there's so many people were drinking for free. All of the celebs were drinking for free. etc. So we got shut down. But John Reynolds, the late John Reynolds, who went on to start the Electric Picnic and Pod and Redbox, came in and poached me on my last night. So I was that girl who got to take off their apron and go,
I'm out of here. See you, fuckers.
Yeah. So I went from there to the Pod and the chocolate bar and became a host and a door whore off the back of being the mezzanine waitress in Mr. Pussy's.
But that was where, am I right in thinking that's where the drag kind of got into you, where you started to feel like that was going to be something you were going to do?
Yeah, I think in Mr. Pussy's, I never thought I would do drag. No. I loved it.
Okay.
And my best friend, Paul Rowley, who's a filmmaker based in New York, was into doing a bit of drag. And I got off on helping him.
Right.
I would like make clothes with him, for him, help him.
Yeah.
I was a little bit better with the makeup than he was.
Yeah.
Both of us were totally inexperienced.
Yeah.
So that's really, I was more like playing with this doll. Mm. But he moved to San Francisco and invited me to come and stay. And that's when I really got into drag, because he was already doing drag in San Francisco. And he signed us up for a show that same day, the day that I arrived. Tuesday nights was Tranny Shack, and it was a Tuesday. And we spent the day just getting in drag, and then we went and performed as a duo at this club. We called ourselves the Fashion Olympics. He had this great white dress, very disco, very kind of Grecian. So I went to a costume hire shop and hired kind of a Grecian dress, and we spent the day kind of making ourselves look a bit like a Grecian strawberry switchblade, if you can imagine that, because we really went to town with the hair.
Yeah.
And we did this song, I'm in Love with a German Film Star, by The Passions, really beautiful song.
I'm going to listen to that on the way home.
And you'll love it. It's a beautiful song. And that was that. I had no real idea that I was going to become a drag queen.
Yeah.
Even then, even afterwards. I sat on the bar then and I made a new friend. And that was Animatronic. She was the first woman that I ever met who was performing in drag.
Yeah.
And she was so much better than the rest of us. Like really incredibly good. And this was before she became a pop star.
Yeah.
And we became besties almost straight away.
Yeah.
We just hit it off.
Yeah.
And that really encouraged me to do it more, because she was like, you're a drag queen.
Yeah.
You know?
She diagnosed you.
Yeah, exactly. But also what happened that night, as I mentioned in the film, a great performer called Steve Lady stole the show, doing a Bowie number, Rock and Roll Suicide, which was to become my first solo number. I never pretend that I didn't pinch it straight from her.
Yeah.
You know, I was just blown away by her, and I was a huge Bowie fan.
Yeah. And there was, I remember when I first saw you feeling that Bowie like was there. Like I was like, this is a Bowie drag queen.
I had never put it together in my head, and that's why she unlocked it for me. Because I was just like, oh, I am a drag queen.
Yeah.
They're right. I'm just not the kind of drag queen I've ever seen. I'm this other kind that I'm going to have to create for myself was really what I realized.
Yeah.
And so Steve Lady and I eventually became friends. It's hard to become friends with someone when you're such a big fan, but we did. We got there. Eventually, we even made out on her bed once for a while, but we didn't seal the deal, unfortunately. I don't think I was like ripe enough for her, you know. She was much more sophisticated than me.
I see.
like a cat playing with a toy, you know what I mean?
But you were happy to be played with.
Oh, so over the moon ecstatic, like, oh my God, all my dreams come true.
Yeah.
So that's how it started for me.
I love the family aspect of drag. Like you mentioned Pixie earlier, and would I be right in saying Pixie's your drag daughter? Is that
absolutely
correct? I don't want to use the incorrect phraseology.
Oh yeah, we're allowed to say that. Yeah.
But all of the connections that you have, you know, the chosen family that comes with drag, I think is so beautiful.
Uh-huh.
And Mr. Pussy says, you know, that she's your drag mother, and she's honored to be that.
Uh-huh.
And then you obviously, I'm sure, have such feelings about your own drag children who are now going to spawn their own drag children.
They have.
Exactly. I was just going to say, who was your drag granddaughter? Is it?
Well, I guess, you know, it's hard to say at the moment because there was a big falling out between.
Okay, well, we won't go there then.
It depends. For example, Anxiety would call herself my daughter for sure. And she would call Viola her daughter.
Okay,
But I would also call Viola my daughter.
Okay.
Since I gave her first gig ever. You know what I mean?
I don't want to start any wars on this podcast.
So the lines get a little blurry. Do you know?
But I love that you can see it because you can see the family resemblance. Like, it makes total sense to me that Anxiety is your drag daughter and that Viola would be part of the family as well.
Yeah.
Where does that come from, that terminology?
Yeah, I think that comes right from the start. It comes from surviving in the ballroom scene where you needed a house and a mother if you were to stand a chance, because a lot of those kids didn't have a house or a mother.
Yeah.
You know?
For people who aren't familiar, ballroom scene is like a queer subculture started in New York in the 80s or earlier? 80s. Yeah. And it was about a lot of kids who left home to try and find somewhere they'd be accepted and connected. Yeah. And I'm absolutely fascinated by it. If you haven't seen Paris is Burning, if you're in any way interested, go and watch Paris is Burning.
Oh, so
and
good.
You'll get your
and Pose.
Primer and Pose. Yes, of course. Yeah. So so many people will be familiar with it now. Yeah. Yeah. So it does come directly from there.
I think it does really come from there. But I think it is just the nature of the relationship. It is exactly what it says on the tin.
Yeah.
You know, Pixie is my drag daughter. It's not the same as having a daughter. It's better.
Well, I mean, I think the fact that she lived here for 10 years and then you had to give her a little nudge to get rid of her is having a daughter currently in this housing situation in Dublin.
And there's something in it with Pixie and I, and I have other daughters who I adore, Chanel and Shalina, many over the years. But there's something in our DNA. Yeah. Pixie and I are so similar as people.
Yeah.
She is a cooler, better version of me. She's even a better looking version, but only if you squint.
Who's squinting? Nobody. Well, I think, you know, the film is so joyful, as discussed previously.
Thank you.
It is such a beautiful, I think, kind of assemblage of all of the bits of you that I know. I mean, obviously, I don't know you intimately, but, you know, it brings in the fun, it brings in the drag. You really feel the, your kind of warmth and kindness that maybe people who went to see a show wouldn't necessarily know is there.
Uh-huh.
And then there's this amazing activism that has become such a focus. Is it still your number one priority, that activism, the HIV activism?
Yeah, there's still a long way to go. And I feel like the film is just another thread in whatever I'm trying to weave in the future.
Yeah.
You know, and we're already engaged with a new season of Pause Vibe. We have a new episode coming out next week, and we have a lot of plans for this year.
Yeah.
And beyond that, I never really know what I'm doing.
Yeah.
I just follow my instinct, try to listen to my inner voice as much as I can and move forward. I think the thing that started me on this journey was so simple. I was in this very room with my friend, Our Lady K. I was going to say J. There's another person. It's with Lady K. And we wrote this song called I Came Out One Night.
Mm.
And I used that song to come out about my HIV status.
Yeah.
And the only reason I knew I was going to do it was because as the song was coming, the lyrics were coming out of me. That's what I was singing about. And I knew it. And following that voice and listening to my instinct kind of led to How to Tell a Secret, to the podcast, to World Pride in Sydney, to Pregnant with a Drag Queen.
Yeah.
And I'm just going to keep doing it. It's like the universe is telling me it's my thing.
Yeah.
And I feel really proud of what we're doing.
It's interesting you said that about songwriting. I heard Billie Eilish talking about that recently, that sometimes like she'll write a song and she won't think it's even about her. And then she'll realize, oh, wait, no, actually, that's very about me. I didn't even know that I needed to kind of get that out of me. So there you go. You and Billie Eilish, very connected.
We're very close.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, it probably won't be long.
Me, Anna, Billie, we're in a group chat.
Can I ask if there was one thing that you wanted people to take away in terms of HIV? From our conversation, obviously you equals you.
Yes.
Is there anything else?
Yeah. I think if you're living with HIV and you feel like you're in a privileged position enough to come out about your status, my advice would be it's the very best thing that you can do for your own mental health and quality of life. And the more of us do it, the better for all of us.
Mm.
It's not everyone who's in that position. And I understand that. So I send them love as well.
Mm.
To everyone else, know your status. We have all of the tools to end new HIV situations.
Yeah.
We have PrEP, which will prevent you ever becoming HIV positive. We have amazing drugs that keep people like me undetectable and prevent us from passing it on.
Mm.
the only reason we have new HIV cases year on year is because people don't test. Mm. And you can test at home for free. Mm. Tests are free with the HSC.
Yep.
And you just go online and they'll send it to your door. It's very discreet. It's very easy to do. And you'll find out your status. Majority of people won't get a positive test. Mm. But you should get peace of mind from knowing that you've played your part.
Yeah.
And some people will get a positive test and we'll be here for you. Reach out to us. But just know that, you know, your health is going to be fine.
Yeah.
You're going to be fine. You're still going to be able to have children who will be HIV negative. Mm. You don't actually need to worry too much about the situation. Mm. And we're going to end the stigma together. So don't feel ashamed. Don't let a virus has no personality, has no judgment. A virus doesn't care who you've been with, who you haven't been with. Mm. So don't let a virus control how you feel about yourself. Mm. And it's great as well to always talk about the fact that this used to be considered a gay disease. And now we're in a situation where there are as many straight people as there are queer people living with HIV. Yeah. And the group that are growing in number year on year is the straight community.
Yeah.
So it's really important for everybody to get tested.
Yeah.
It's also really sad that most women only get tested when they're pregnant. It's the only time that anyone suggests to them that they should. The only time that it's like in a hospital where they're going to ask you to have a HIV test.
Yeah.
And so most women who have a diagnosis because they're pregnant, which is already quite a scary thing to go through.
Yeah.
And a lot of them, the majority of them, are in monogamous relationships. So they have no idea that this has come for them.
Yeah, so that's a nice layered thing to process there. A lot going on.
It's very sad. And then a lot of women find out because they have AIDS. Mm. They don't find out through pregnancy or through a test. They don't find out until they're very sick indeed.
Yeah.
And we don't want that to happen either.
No.
Aoife Cummins, who was on Tommy Tiernan recently, came out on our podcast. She's an amazing young woman. She had to ask three times in the hospital for a HIV test before eventually on the fourth time she got it.
Yeah.
Because doctors are fallible too. They might have one day's education on HIV when they're in med school because there's so much for them to learn.
Yeah.
And they don't put, they think it's a queer disease too.
Yeah.
I have a friend of a friend who passed away a couple of years ago in a hospital in Brazil for exactly that reason. Mm. Nobody wanted to ask him if he was gay and test him for HIV. So they decided that he had cancer. And by the time they figured out he didn't, it was too late.
And that's the stigma.
That's the stigma. It's the stigma. And people just making an assumption when half of the people living with HIV are already heterosexual.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It just doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, we have to get over it.
We have to. So just go online and book yourself a test. You need to be responsible for your own sexual health. You can't point the finger at anybody else. Yeah. You know, if there's problems in your relationship, that's your problem too.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But the tools are there.
Yeah.
And the engine is yours.
Yeah. You know? Well, I love it. And I think that's a beautiful place to end. Thank you so much for this time.
My pleasure.
I hope everybody watches Pregnant with a Drag Queen. As I said, it's on Virgin Media One on Tuesday at 11 p.m. But as Veda said, it's also going to be available on the Player, so you can watch it whenever it suits.
Please do, Players.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Flimsy stands slowing you down? Well, it's time to upgrade. Armadillo builds durable North American-made tablet stands and kiosks. We're so confident, we offer a lifetime warranty. So, elevate your business and visit armadillo.com. That's ARMODILO.com and use code ACAST for 5% off. Armadillo, built to last, designed to impress.